to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss an article from the July issue of the Beef Watch newsletter titled, "Is It Time to Consider Virtual Fencing for Intensive Grazing Management?" To have a conversation about this topic, I'm joined today by the co-authors, Dr. E.J. Schoen, as well as Dr. Mary Janowski, who are both Extension specialists with the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Thanks for joining me today.
Happy to be here, Aaron.
Yep.
So as we talk about this topic today, this is one that I honestly am quite excited about because of the opportunities that I think this technology is beginning to offer the opportunity in terms of utilizing these virtual fence tools as a way to really better manage our grazing. So before we dive into some of the details that you've had experience with in terms of research using virtual fence, give us kind of a big picture view of where we're at today with virtual fence and maybe kind of how we got to where we are now.
Well, I think I'll just start with kind of explaining how virtual fence works, because I think it's useful to understand the concept to then understand what you can possibly do with it. But for those people who have ever had a dog with one of those collars that essentially you can set the boundary and say the dog can only go so far into the yard, and then it will create a sound to alert the dog that they're getting to that boundary, and then it will provide an electrical stimuli or a shock if they continue through that boundary. That's the same kind of concept with virtual fencing. But if you had experience with the early dog collars, versus the newer dog collars, you know that they have changed over time, and the ability to do some things has really improved. Like with now the cow collars, you can essentially develop any kind of fence that you want in terms of any shape, and you're doing it all based off of GPS, which gives you a lot of flexibility with your grazing management and your ability to use a single water source but have multiple paddocks, because you can create alleys that you move and those types of things. But essentially, the cow gets told where the boundary is based off of that sound. And it is amazing to me how well they figure this out. After training, you can actually watch the herd. And when one cow gets the sound, the rest of the cows will stop because they hear it and they think, okay, this is the boundary. And you will watch them turn from that direction of travel because they know if they continue moving forward, they're going to get that either that stimuli or halter actually uses vibration. So collar systems out there use some sort of electrical stimuli as kind of the ultimate end thing to keep the cattle in.
I guess you think about the different products that are out there today. Talk through, I guess, what are some of the different options or opportunities to use virtual fence? Because there's quite a bit of differences out there in terms of where the equipment might fit based on your grazing management, the size of your operations, and things like that.
Yeah, I think there are some actual key differences among products that are available. Currently, there are four manufacturers that have products available in the U.S. Vince is probably the one that, if you've heard about virtual fencing in the past, that's been on the market in the U.S. for quite a while. It's owned by Merck. And then there's No Fence, E-Shepherd, and Halter. And these all have been developed in other countries and kind of moved into the U.S. So they're not new, so to speak. They're just new to the U.S. So some of the key differences among products would be whether or not they have a ability to be solar charged or if they just have a battery that needs to be replaced. So Vince is a battery that needs to be replaced. The other three all have solar charging capabilities with the idea that then you don't have to get the cattle up to replace batteries. Other key differences that I would point out is whether they use cellular or a tower. So how do they get their signal? So No Fence, E-Shepherd can both use cellular as a way to get signal, meaning that if you have cellular signal, you do not have the extra cost of the infrastructure of a base station that is required for those two, whereas Halter requires a base station, and so does Vince. E-Shepherd has the ability to use a base station if you don't have cellular. So that's kind of a nice thing, because the base station is kind of a higher fixed cost. If you have a lot of cows, it's probably not that big of a deal when you start thinking about that cost put over top of the time frame and the number of cows you have. But if you're a smaller herd, those cellular options can be really nice in terms of not having as much upfront costs.
Oh, and I think about where many of the ranches are in the United States, especially we think about Nebraska, the sand hills of Nebraska. There's a lot of places where there's not good cell service. And so your location, based on what you have access to, also probably shapes which of these products are options for you.
Yeah, I would point out too, though, that even with cellular, you don't have to have a very strong signal or even a consistent signal. The GPS is how it knows where the boundaries are, but what it needs a signal for is providing updates, so to speak. So if you change, for instance, where the fence is, the cattle have to be in an area where they can get signal. And so how quickly it will respond and how quickly it will move the fences, so to speak, depends on how good your signal is. I've been kind of impressed at some of the one of the fields that we have is down in a area that doesn't really have great cell signal, and we have not had any type of problem with the update. Sometimes it'll take, they really update about every 10 minutes. Sometimes it takes 20 instead, but not a huge deal there. So that's the other thing. Even with both the tower and the cellular, it doesn't have to have constant signal, so to speak. It just needs to be able to get updates.
And I would add to Mary's comment is that so most of these companies, when they use cellular and they actually require an older network, meaning more comprehensive and more coverage network. So, as an example, we all know that our phone right now uses either LTE or 5G. But for those areas, as long as you have 3G or 4G, you're probably going to work with the virtual fencing collars. And most of these companies, they all have a coverage map that you can work with them to evaluate your site's suitability to use cellular or tower base before you make the decision.
So really what I hear you saying is if you're considering these different options and you think one of these may or may not work, go ahead and visit with the company, visit with the representative, and maybe actually have them do an on-site visit and discuss based on your goals, what you have access to, which of these products may be the best fit for you.
That's always a good idea. And we also encourage folks to talk to us because we have worked with three out of the four products and then no other colleagues that work with the other products. So we have a pretty good wealth to answer a lot of questions if that's what producers prefer.
So let's talk about your experience working with these products. I guess tell us a little about the history of your experience, how you've utilized them, and what you found.
Well, I think Yiju can talk more about some of the, I would say, history. I've only been helping with this for the last year or so, and I will say that honestly, I was a bit skeptical. mostly because, it looks like a lot of money. I mean, our estimated costs per head per month range anywhere from $7 to $13, and that's a lot of money, right? Like if you think about it. And so I was kind of like, am I really going to get that much bang for my buck? And I think the key thing is you got to figure out what it is that you would do differently and how is that going to bring value. So, what we've been playing with has been a few different things, but one of which that I was really excited about was actually using it for strip grazing. We all know that strip grazing can increase the harvest efficiency of dormant forage. And so, thinking about fall grazing or winter grazing, and being able to strip graze without having to put posts in the ground when it's frozen sounds really nice. And so last year, we actually did that with actually some stocker calves. And one of the things that I was pretty amazed by is that you could, at the end, you could actually see the line where the virtual fence was set. And so compared to the polywire system, I think we had actually statistically, we had just as good of efficiency of harvest efficiency. Visually, you could see You could not tell the difference. Once I took up the poly wire and the post and you compared paddock to paddock, you could not tell. So it worked just as well. And we were moving them once a week. And with virtual fencing, there's no reason we have to do it that infrequently, right? So now the question becomes, how much advantage could I get by doing daily moves or 3 day moves, those types of things? In that trial, I think with 1 week moves, we got an extra 20% grazing off of that dormant stockpiled sorghum sedan grass. So I was pretty impressed by that.
Yep, 54 days versus 70 days.
Yeah, that's, I think, as you start thinking about the alternative, if you were needing to feed harvested feed and looking at the value of that versus the strip grazing, getting an additional, I think, 16 days of grazing, that's really amazing. The thing that comes to mind for me also, as you mentioned, strip grazing, we can have this happen in Nebraska. If you think about a situation where we've got downed corn in a cornfield and the real challenge that can present for producers. Because they'd like to utilize that resource. We want to avoid acidosis. With virtual fence, we can basically make a feed bunk in the field, move it daily or twice a day, and really minimize some of those health risks we can have with grain overload or something like that.
Yeah, totally. And I think when I first got started in kind of the cover crop world, I was grazing really high quality forage like oats and brassicas in the fall. And two things that I noticed, one of which is that our harvest efficiency was really bad. How much you would estimate you should be able to get and how much we got was really different. And then the quality is so high that unless you have like a growing calf, really, you probably need to be limit feeding. And we've done things with, poly wire and limit feeding dry cows on that high quality feed. And just thinking about being able to really narrow that down, I think is quite amazing what the virtual fence allows us to do with really minimal effort. And when I say minimal effort, once the cattle are trained, the effort isn't that much. You might have a collar that gets lost every now and then. We've not had a lot of retention problems, honestly, which I've been very impressed by, especially we fed calves in bunks, and I thought that was going to be a nightmare that they would, catch those collars and pop them off, but we did not have any issues with that. But the training is very important. And so what you have to do is you need to have those cattle start associating the sound with the stimuli. And once they do that, they'll just start responding to the sound. And so before you go and do something like try to strip graze, it's important that they have figured that out. And so doing that training process, we've done two different experiments with virtual fencing that I was involved with. And the very first one, they were very well trained before we started, and we were trying to keep two groups apart using virtual fence, and it worked. And I was shocked because even the companies didn't think it would work. And I think it was because they were so well trained that you could keep those two groups grazing in the same pasture but different paddocks without having any kind of physical fence between them, which opens up some opportunities for us to do some leader follower grazing, for instance. Maybe have your heifers be able to graze ahead of your cows, or maybe your young cows or thin cows, like allowing them have access to part of the field before the rest of the herd. And I thought that was really neat. But then the second trial we did, we didn't have them as well trained before we put them out. And we did have more escapees, meaning they would go through that virtual fence. But after the first 2 weeks in that trial, they had it figured out and we didn't have any problems after that, which brings up the point about this is not a replacement for perimeter fence. It is a good option instead of internal fencing, but it's not a replacement for permanent fence.
But Mary, remember, like, we also have escapees in the traditional virtual fence and conventional and rotational grazing groups as well. So it's not just the virtual fence group.
Yeah, you're 100% correct, Ija, that when we think about the virtual fencing, and I talked about escapees, even with the poly wire and strip grazing, cattle get through there sometimes. And actually, is one of the most annoying things, right? Because then I've got to go and pull back the fence and push them back through and yada yada yada. And we had that happen, of course. I think everybody has that happen. And virtual fencing, just like traditional, say, electric fence, if you put enough pressure on cattle, they're going to go through that fence. And different animals have different amounts of pressure required, right, to force them to do that. So it's kind of interesting to see the calves that we did the strip grazing project with. I made a mistake. I do that a lot. One of the mistakes I made was I had one who had lost a collar. It was the only one that lost a collar during that whole project. And I went to get him up to put the collar back on him, and I forgot to turn off the fence for all the calves. So of course I got him up, but of course other calves were coming with him. And we get to where the boundary is, and they hear the signal and they stop. And I thought, oh man, now I gotta turn off this fence. So I'm standing there, we turn off the fence, I'm waiting for it to update so that we'll allow them to go through there. And I was just watching them. So they didn't like where I was standing, right? Because they were feeling pressure to move away from me. And they would go up to where the fence was, they would hear the sound, and they would turn around and come back and look at me, and then they would go back and hear the sound. So, of course, I step back, relieve some pressure, and they just stand there and they just wait. And I thought, wow, it is can be just as effective, right? Because to those cattle, I wasn't putting enough pressure to force them through. On the other hand, we have it on some cow calf right now, some of our pairs, and I have one cow who does not like humans. She just is one of those really flighty cows, right? I think everybody probably has one of those or has had one of those. Maybe they got rid of her. And I walk into the field on foot and she sees me, she takes off. That's just her nature. So with the virtual fence, she takes off, she hears the sound, and she'll stop, but she looks back and I'm still present. So by golly, she's going, right? To her, my presence is way more pressure than what that virtual fence is. So she'll go through that virtual fence. But what's interesting is I watch the rest of the cows, and they follow her until they get to the virtual fence. They hear the sound, they turn around and be like, I'm not doing that. So I agree. Just like the electric fence, some cattle are not going to respect it as well as the virtual fence. They may not respect it. And so you may have some animals who are non-responders or who just have higher flight zones and those types of things where it won't work as well. Now she'll come back, which is important to understand too. She runs off anytime I go into the field, but she comes back to the herd because there's that herd instinct, so it's not really a huge deal.
So talk about that a little bit. When she goes through the barrier, what happens? Is she continuing to get that electrical impulse? Does it shut off after a period of time? And then is she able to come back through that virtual fence without getting shocked? How does that work?
Oh, it's a great question. So all of them are a little bit different in terms of exactly how they work, but they all have a very similar premise, and that is that they typically have a period where they're going to give her the sound to try to tell her, hey, you're going to the boundary, and then they'll do a shock. The one that we're using right now is E-Shepherd, and the way it works is it basically does that for 3 rounds. So it gives her the sound, it kind of increases in pitch, and then if she keeps moving towards the boundary, it'll get a shock. It'll do that 3 times, and then she's considered escaped. If she's still outside of that boundary, she's just escaped. It will not continue to shock her. It is a one-way gate, which means that now that she's out, if she tries to come back in, she gets no response from the collar. So she can just walk back through, no problem. Which means that you have that ability, like, say, if you have one water source and your water source is in the virtual fence, that's another thing that will cause, even if the whole herd gets out, it'll cause the whole herd to come back in, right? They got to go to water. A few of them are a little bit different because some of them have like a zone that's kind of like the sound zone, and then they keep going and then they'll get the shock. But in general, they're all kind of similar in their premise, and they're all one-way gates.
Oh, that's really interesting. I think you both well said, we all are aware of cattle that don't respect physical fence barriers either, or sometimes even good barbed wire fence. So I think there's not a fence, not many fences can contain a cow or a bull that really want to get out, except I think some of these ones that are built for livestock auctions and things like that. So I guess the point is that there's some training that goes with this. There's some cattle that may not fit this tool, and there may need to be some management done with those. But I want to circle back a little bit to what you said early on, Mary, about good training. Talk through with us, what does good training look like? How do we need to best prep cattle if we're thinking about using this as a tool?
Well, my understanding of the keys to good training, and Yuja can help me with this one. But the first thing that we have been doing is that we essentially just put the boundary at a physical fence, so they start associating the sound with the physical fence, and then after like a couple days, we actually move the boundary and start putting it into the pasture. And so now they have to basically interact with that boundary because they have to kind of find it, right? It's in the pasture in some random location, and they're like, oh, you know, they hear the sound, they get a shock, and they start associating it. Our training procedure is usually 10 to 14 days, and it's literally like every few days we just move boundaries around, kind of creating what I call an obstacle course for the cattle. In that you're just trying to create this interaction to where they have to figure out where the boundary is by hearing that sound and potentially getting a shock if they don't respond to it. They actually figure it out fairly quickly. I've been quite impressed by how quickly they start to associate. And there are some animals who are what I would say quick learners and some who are less quick learners. But the eShepherd protocol, they'll actually give you back a result and give you an audio ratio, which is basically the number of sounds relative to the number of pulses or shocks that an animal receives. And so their guidance is once that it gets above 80%, that basically for every 20 or 30 sounds, they're receiving one shock, meaning they're responding 20 to 30 times they responded to the sound before they actually didn't respond and got a shock. When that happens, they're like, okay, they're good to go and they are well trained. And that seems to be true.
And then, so basically, the idea is you want your cattle to respond more to sound than shock. And then, also, as a whole herd basis, we would want the more animals to be trained with an audio ratio over 80%, the better. So, a lot of the times, and the standard that I use is if you have 80 to 90% of your whole herd is well trained, and I have a lot of confidence to say that herd is well trained. Now, we have different research protocol, and some of that will lead to a little bit stricter training rate. But for most folks, especially the big country type of rancher, I think 80% animals with an over 80% audio ratio is a pretty good parameter to look at.
Talk about the use of the product itself in terms of interacting with it as you, the manager. How does that work? How do you change your boundaries? Is that difficult? I guess share some perspective on use of that, and I guess also information you get back. You mentioned this already in terms of the shock to audio ratio, but is there other information you get that's helpful for you as the manager?
Yes, so I wish I can share a screen in front of all of the listeners, but I can't, so I'll do my best to describe it. So basically, all of these products, you're gonna use a web browser based or a phone app based application to manage your virtual fence or virtual paddocks. So what it does is you're gonna have an account with the companies, and once you're set, and usually you will have a success rep or customer success kind of person from the company would walk you through the process and make sure that you're comfortable managing your animals based on your management need. So from my experience is it's super simple for you to create a virtual fence. Basically, once you know where you want to put the fence on, and you just move your mouse or cursor over the area and you draw the line, and poof, that's it. So, one thing to notice is that you want to avoid really tight corners. So, and that's really making a lot of sense because you don't want to create a situation that when cattle hears the stimuli and then it turn around and hear it immediately again, right? So you wanted to put that psychological and perception into consideration as well. So the good news is all of these companies, they are having all those restrictions embedded into their system, meaning that if I want to draw a 30 degrees angle, they would not let me. So you're gonna have some frustration seeing all those error code, but then hopefully you understand their intention. So once you have finished your virtual paddock drawing, and then you just need to click on the command, say, I want to activate this virtual paddock right now or later. You can actually schedule the move. And you can then also associate the herd that you want to put into this virtual paddock simultaneously. So regarding the information you get back, so for most of the producer setting, you would be able to see the historical track of the animals, which is really helpful. And you can also see where that they have been grazed. All of these companies are having a function called grazing density heat map, so you can see where they have spent most of their times at. So data access, that can be a little bit different because we are doing research and they are giving out a little bit more information. However, I think a lot of things are negotiable and discussable with the companies. And basically, all you need to know is let them know what you want to do. And all of the company, most of them are willing to work with you. Mary, to go back to the historical track, I think that's where you're getting, right?
Well, I would go there. I was just going to add when she was talking about actually just building the virtual paddock that it's actually overlaid on like a Google map. Like, so most people know what that looks like. So you can actually see where your, say, your perimeter boundaries are. You can usually easily see where your waterer is and tell the product, this is where my water is located. And it does have a lot of foolproofness to it. Like, for instance, most of them will tell you, hey, you created a paddock and it doesn't have a water source in there, right? It's because you need to tell it this is where the water is. As you said, it has some limitations on the angles and those types of things, so you don't create something that is going to limit your success, force the cattle into somewhere you don't want them to be, so to speak. So I think that's really useful because it is fairly intuitive in terms of being able to set up the paddocks and being able to move them from paddock to paddock. All the products are a little bit different in terms of those interfaces and the apps. I will say that I know that some of the apps have limited use in terms of what you can and can't do. Like, sometimes it's just being able to turn off like the whole group or turn them on. But I've played around with some of that on the app, and I've been impressed with the ability to stand in the field and make changes and do some of those things that are necessary. So Yija just she said, "Oh, you're going to go back to the track because one of the cool things is the data that you get back can start helping you make some management decisions or help you think about what's going on." So she mentioned the tracking. Last month we had a cow that they were looking at the track on. One of the students looked at the track on it and said, "Hey, this cow has not moved as much in the last 48 hours as the rest of the group. She doesn't seem to have gone to water nearly as much as the rest of them. Can somebody go down and take a look at her?" Right? And of course, our crew said, "Oh yeah, we've been watching that cow. She does seem to have a little bit of a limp. We were going to get her up today anyways." So yes, she did have some foot rot, right? So you could actually notice that on the virtual fencing. And then, as Yija pointed out, the heat map is also kind of useful. So, because it can kind of tell you where they're spending their time, and you can also kind of say, oh, if they're overgrazing this area, I'm just going to fence that out. Or if we have had a little bit of rain in the past month, and so we have some really wet spots. And cattle can really muck up those wet spots. And that's another option that you have is to be able to say, oh, I'm just going to fence them out of that because I don't want them to make that a big mud hole, right? So kind of neat to be able to get some idea from that information that it's providing you to help you change some of your management decisions. The heat map's kind of nice because sometimes it's a little bit hard to know exactly where that overgrazed area is. Like you can go out and you can look at the pasture and you can be like, oh, it's here, but then where is it on this map when I'm trying to draw it? And the heat map will kind of help you figure that out.
Mary, you mentioned the opportunity to identify this cow that had some foot rot, but I guess one of the questions that would come to mind for me is, do these cattle experience stress by wearing this collar and having this sound go off multiple times a day? As you observe, as you look at the health of these cattle that have managed with these collars on, what's your perspective on that?
Well, I think there's actually data on like the stress level, and Yiji can talk about that data, but I will say my observation has been that I don't think it's really any different than any other fence. I mean, they are responding to a sense, right? So kind of like they go up and they see, oh, well, the fence is here, I'm going to turn. It's the same kind of concept. They do not seem to be upset by that sound. Like I don't see them being like, oh man, this is bad, right? It's more like, oh, and they kind of just turn. Like it doesn't seem to be a really huge deal. The cattle, when you first put them on, of course it's a new thing, and some cattle are more responsive to that than others. One thing that I will say observed was the E Shepherd, anyways, has kind of a, I would say, a big mass that's underneath the chin, and that's the bulk of that collar. And it looks pretty bulky, and I actually was kind of like, is this going to work on calves? Like, because we put it on 600-pound calves, and I was kind of like, it's like 3 pounds, so it's pretty big. And yes, when you let them out, they kind of buck and jump around, and they're kind of like, what is this thing, right? But they calm down fairly quickly. But we put it on a cooperator site, and the way his setup was is that his chute went directly out into the pasture. And I noticed that the cows bucked and jumped more, and it was almost like a cycle that was feeding itself because that collar was moving because they're bucking and jumping, and then they buck and jump because the collar is moving. Whereas when we put them on our cows, they actually have to go into like a smaller pen area, and so they have to slow down to kind of go through the gate. And so it was almost like when they stopped, like that initial buck and jump to go through the gate, they stopped getting that feedback, and so they were fine after that, if that makes sense. So that's one thing I would say, to know and to realize is that you may want to have the ability kind of to slow them down to like stop responding to the movement of that collar to realize that collar isn't doing anything.
We talked about your experience with strip grazing, and you briefly touched on being able to have two groups of cattle in one pasture, no physical fence, just the virtual fence separating them. Talk a little more about pasture management and some of the opportunities you see with using the virtual fence tool.
Yeah, so right now we're using it actually to manage some of our bromegrass pastures. I have some smaller groups of cattle, like 15 to 20 head in a group. And the thing that I really like about the virtual fence is I can use it to rotationally graze without having interior fences. And we're using one water source, like for multiple paddocks. And the cool thing is that I know there's always that challenge of how do you design your fencing to be able to use that same water source. And I like the virtual fencing in that I can create alleys to get them there, but I can change those alleys as I go back to that same paddock. So they're not using that same area over and over. So I don't have all the, I would say, problems with an alley of having them overgraze it, having them put a lot of nutrients in one location, those types of things. Or depending on where it's at, like that's if it's a, kind of in a corner of the pasture and I'm trying to utilize that. Or I can do pies, right? So I can get them down. The key thing about using the virtual fencing around the water source is you just want to make sure you still have a big enough area around the water source to where they don't get signal or don't get sound when they're going to water, that they feel comfortable in that water area.
Describe for us a little bit this pasture where you got two groups of cattle, one water source. They're coming to the same tank to drink, but then they're being separated or staying separate as they go back out to graze. What does that look like?
No, that's a great question, Aaron. That's actually the next thing we need to do. In the particular project I was just talking about, we actually did have two different water sources, and so they were not going back to the same water source. That's actually the next thing I want to play with. So right now we're using one water source for multiple paddocks, but it's only one group. I think this is an interesting question because I am a little bit concerned given the fact that the cow do seem to respond to other cows' sounds. When they get together at a same water source, will they separate or not? And I don't know the answer. So that's to be determined.
All right, well, that brings clarity because in my mind, I have to admit, I thought, how is that working?
In this situation, we did have two different water sources when we had two different groups. And so one was going to a different water source than the other.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
But then, Aaron, if you think about, because Mary talked about we were able to manage two different groups in the same pasture using virtual fence, right? So what we can do is actually create two different paddocks with some sort of overlay of the water area. So I think it's actually doable and it shouldn't be too hard to do actually.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very interesting thing to observe in terms of seeing how the cattle come together and then how they sort themselves out as they go back to their respective paddock or grazing area. And as you well said, Mary, are they going to want to stay together? Are they going to, how's that going to work? And so it'll be a good test of the product in terms of what are the limits and what are the boundaries. And the other thing I think that we know with any technology, I just think about most of us all have a cell phone. We started out with a flip phone, and now we've got a computer in our hand that can do things that most of us don't even use the capability of. Probably this technology is just going to continue to improve and continue to, I guess, expand in terms of its ability.
Yes, I agree. I think we currently are somewhat limited by our imagination. And then, of course, as we get to use this and we think about things we want to do, given the feedback to the companies, I think there's always going to be improvements that will be continued to be made over time. So I do think in the future, I really think this is going to be something that producers are going to really latch on to. I do think right now, I would say, you really need to look at what does it cost you, and then where are you going to get that added value? Like, I think strip grazing is something that's great, like that rotational grazing that I was talking about, especially like if you had rented pasture and now you can make better use of that rented pasture without investing in infrastructure. I think there's some definite advantage to that. If you have some of that rough terrain, so to speak, that's just a pain to be able to fence, but you've wanted to be able to do more rotational grazing, those are the types of things that could have some advantages. Keeping them out of waterways and not having fences in waterways. Oh my, I hate water gaps with passion. So those types of things I think are where virtual fencing kind of has some benefits that, you may be able to capture, but your situation may be one where it doesn't make any sense for you, right? If you already have quite a few paddocks designed or you have your setup such that you really have very similar type of layout of the land and their grazing pressure is very similar in areas and it's working well, it may not be for you, right? So I think you really got to say, okay, this is going to cost me this much. How am I going to get back that much in my extra forage utilization to be able to pay for it?
I think, though, I would also just add, as we look at the value of grass in Nebraska, I think we're looking at $60 to $80 in many places per month right now for grazing. And so if you're able to improve through grazing management, again, not overgrazing, but improving grazing distribution, minimizing animal impact on areas that maybe they typically hit hard, don't use hills or side hills, and we can better, more effectively utilize resources. There's a tremendous amount of value there that I think we need to sit down and put a pencil to, because I think not only does it improve what we can access in terms of resources, but if now we can maybe run more cattle than we were able to before on the same piece of ground, or better utilize certain species of grass at different times of year than we were before. There's some benefits that we really even haven't talked about very much today.
Oh, 100% agree. And I did some penciling, and that's where I started getting to where I was like, ooh, I actually think this is useful. As you mentioned, can I end up having more cows on the same land? I mean, it's hard to find pasture, right? And so that's a great one. And then we're actually using it on our state fair herd, for instance, and pasture that we have them in is a wet area with some drier hills. But there's a lot of Garrison foxtail and a lot of Reed's canary, and being able to get them on that early in the spring and force them to graze, say that Reed canary, and keep them off of the brome and some of the, actually, there's some Timothy and some other stuff in there. Keep them off of that early in the spring so that I'm actually getting more use out of that pasture on whole, is a real advantage. And so I've been really impressed by what we can do there. So totally agree with you. And like you said, do I want to keep them off of some of those slopes that they tend to overgraze, or some of those areas that are a little bit more sensitive? I think there's all kinds of opportunities. So don't get me wrong, I'm just saying you need to think about where you're going to get that advantage and make sure that you are going to use it in a way that's going to give you the advantage that pays for itself.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think anytime we're looking at an input to the system, we need to sit down and think through what is the potential value here? What's the cost? What's the relationship? Is it really going to return? And I think what I would like to folks to take home is there's way more opportunity here than many of us have ever thought about. And so I think we have to be creative and recognize that you're getting more benefit than just being able to move your fence more frequently. There's a lot of other benefits that go along with that that have additional value as well.
Yeah, it's another tool in the toolbox, right? That I think can have some huge benefits. And you were talking about managing at certain times of the year, right? Like forcing them into that area, maybe that has, say, your cheatgrass, and keeping them off of some of the area that you don't want them on during that time of the year. It gives you the flexibility to have nothing that is permanent, so to speak, right? So I can actually be very targeted in where I make them graze, which I think has a lot of potential.
Well, one other thing I would just add, for much of Nebraska, eastern red cedar is a major issue. And I know for some folks, this is a challenge that they've tried cutting, they've tried, rooting those out. In many cases now, they're looking at fire as an option. With virtual fence, internal fences and fire are no longer an issue. And that to me, I think for many folks also is going to be an important piece as they think about trying to maintain grasslands and control woody invasive species. So anyway, I think I'm excited about this technology. Again, there's always things to learn. It doesn't apply to everyone, but I think it brings a tool that really we've just begun to scratch the surface of what we can do with it.
100%. I think this is one of those things that it's a tool in the toolbox, and it has a lot of flexibility and a lot of opportunity.
Anything else that either of you'd like to add on this topic as we point towards wrapping this up?
Yep. So I have a general question. If you have some ideas but you're not sure, please talk to us, especially Mary Janowski, and we might be trying some ideas out at our research site. Also, Aaron and I hosted a virtual trade show inviting all four companies, which is recorded. So they talk about their products, features, and I think more exciting is that each company invited a producer, shared their user experience. So if you want to hear or understand their products more in depth, please feel free to click on the link that Aaron's gonna provide about the virtual trade show and hear about your peers' experience using them.
Yeah, as Eiji mentioned, that's at go.unl.edu/virtual_fence. Or if you go to beef.unl.edu, the article we talked about today, Is It Time to Consider Virtual Fencing for Intensive Grazing Management? In that article, you can find the link to that 2-hour virtual trade show. And again, as Yiji well said, each company representative talked about their product, and then they had a producer that's used the product. And so would really encourage you to go view that. It'll just be an excellent way for you to know which of these products are out there and how they might apply to your individual situation. So really appreciate both of your time today. Appreciate your work on this, the research you're doing. I think it's, as a producer I worked with, he said, Aaron, I think this is going to be as big of an impact to the cattle industry as barbed wire was when it was invented, 140 years ago. And I think he's right. I think this could really, for many folks, not for everybody, but for many folks, be a significant game changer in terms of grazing management and in a lot of ways. So I'm excited about this, excited about your research. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Aaron.
Well, as I already mentioned, for more information on the topic we discussed in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find the article at beef.unl.edu. Again, the title of the article, Is It Time to Consider Virtual Fencing for Intensive Grazing Management?